Welcome to ESPN AM Station 1700 Real Estate Radio Hour. Before we get into our content-loaded show here, I'd like to give a shout-out to our guest last week. We had Bill Mathis from Always Best Care Senior Services on last week. If you're looking for assisted care for a loved one, or you're looking for a better return on your rental property, give Bill Mathis a call. Also, we had Randy Sterrett from a hedge fund advisor. Ryan, it was your guest, right?
Yeah, Randy was on yesterday. He is talking about what it was like to be an asset manager. And in addition to that, he is the acquisitions manager for Aslin Real Estate Group, buying properties right here locally in coastal San Diego. We actually have one in escrow with
him
right now.
Happy to say, hear that.
You better come through, Randy.
All right. Well, this week we actually have two guests with us. We've got Brian Miller with Farmers Insurance.
Hello.
And we've also got Chuck Wise, a commercial real estate agent from Sperry Van Ness.
Hello.
I'm David McKelvin, and I'm here with Ryan White. Ryan?
Hi there. Welcome.
Great. So our hotline is 888-551-2593. If you have any questions, give us a call. We're going to open up the show today with our market housing facts, giving you an update on what the heck is going on out there in the real estate market. And I got to say, guys, it is really heating up. I don't know. It seemed as though we figured that the people out there were going to take a while before they really got that the real estate market is appreciating. But that's not the case. I mean, there is enough news out there. I think enough people know that the real estate market is higher right now. In fact, existing home sales are up 8.6% over last year. Existing inventory is down 24.4%. Distressed properties are down 33%, and interest rates are down 0.86%. So almost a percent down on our interest rates right now. It's not hard to see why the housing market is absolutely heating up.
Well, distressed properties are down one-third. Is that what you said?
One-third. When you really look at what's going on with distressed assets, what you're going to find is that the banks, although are still foreclosing on people, they are taking a long time before they come to market. And the market is so low in inventory right now that when these assets come to market, they actually get absorbed right away. So we're not really feeling the pressure that we used to feel when the REOs, when the short sales came to market that we used to. I mean,
well, so the inventory is down, as you said, 24.4 or a quarter. We're a quarter down, so 75% of our inventory is out there. But what I think is most important here is that the amount of distressed properties is decreasing, which I would think is the precursor to some kind of a correction. Because if that is still increasing, obviously we're still on our way down. And I mean, Chuck, what are you seeing? Are you seeing the same thing in commercial?
We are. We're seeing a lot of competitive offers for commercial. Mm-hmm. Any good property, particularly in San Diego County, we're national. But we're seeing this happen all over the country, that there are competing offers. We're actually rolling out an auction next week with hundreds of properties that are basically it's designed to liquidate property for banks and REOs.
Oh, wow.
Wait, come again. What was that you just said?
It's a national auction. And on the national auction, we have properties in California, Nevada, Indianapolis, all over the country. But these are commercial properties that will be sold at auction absolute. So if a bidder bids on the property, he knows that there will be a prevailing bidder. It will not be a reserve, get jerked back the way some auctions do happen. This is an absolute auction.
We should definitely get back into that. So, that makes a lot of sense. So, but I would also say that, to me, an auction like that is a sign that the real estate market is not great. Because when things are flying high, we didn't see auctions. There was no need to auction anything in 2004.
Yeah,
I'm wondering why there's so many auctions, right? I mean, why is that happening?
Candidly, auctions can bring the highest price. It's really funny. They heat the market up, especially if they're teed up properly. You can get a high number of qualified bidders who have vetted the property. They look at all the due diligence in advance, so they make non-contingent offers. And it can be a wonderful way of really obtaining highest and best with a competitive setting.
Wow, we definitely should get more into that and find out if there's deals to be had
that way.
Absolutely. Sure.
Well, you know, when we talk about the market appreciating in value, let's not get too ahead of ourselves here. I mean, we are seeing a lot of great signs. This is an election year. And, I get a lot of home sellers that say, well, you know what, David, I'm just going to keep my house off the market because it's appreciating. And the fact is, you're right. No matter who gets elected this year, buyers and sellers are still going to make transactions in this market. And, you know, with that said, there isn't a candidate out there right now that really has a plan that's going to stimulate the marketplace, but I don't think they really need to. Homeowners, Americans out there, still feel like home ownership is a very good investment. If you look back to 2000 to today, you'll see that home values are still outproducing the stock market. I mean, if you look at specific months, you're going to find that that's not the case. But you know, when we're looking at appreciation, we're not talking about 5, 6, 7% appreciation like we saw in 2004, 2005. We're talking like 1% a year until about 2016 when we get back to 3.5% a year appreciation. So we're not talking about a get-rich-quick scheme here. We're just talking about a decent, healthy real estate market.
Well, I certainly hope we get back to that. That will be sustainable. I mean, that's where we need to be to sustain long-term growth. That was one of the problems we had, is it was just way out of control. And I think one of the things we need to get back into that marketplace is the ability for buyers to re-entering the marketplace. And there have been a lot of people who have experienced real estate catastrophes here of recent with these short sales and foreclosures. Perhaps they weren't aware of what they were getting themselves into.
Well, there's also Chapter 7, Chapter 13.
Bankruptcy, of course.
Deed in lieu. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it kind of brings me to an article I found in the UT this week. It talks about how a short sale can mean a big hit to your credit score. And I think we all know that's true, right? If you're a short sale, you have a big hit to your credit score. And I don't think that's terribly out of line, that if you're selling a home short, you're not paying your debt completely. Not crazy to say that it should take a hit to your credit score. But what's unique here, I get asked this question all the time. Will a bank allow me to short sell my home if I'm current on my payments? And although that's like Bigfoot in our industry, someone's brother's cousin's uncle's dog heard of someone that successfully processed a short sale without missing their payments. But in practice, I've never seen it happen.
I've never seen it happen either, although I am hearing that it's happening. Just like when we used to hear that people were getting loan modifications, for a while we didn't see them, then we started seeing them. I mean, if you had a short sale, then in order to do another loan, you have to have 3 years seasoning before you can get another FHA loan, 2 years seasoning past that short sale to get a VA loan, 7 years on a high balance loan. So, I mean, there is an amount of seasoning if you have gone late on your mortgage. But I think Ryan is talking about maybe getting a short sale done without even going late at all.
Well, in this article, it was in the Union Tribune, apparently Fannie and Freddie are saying they have provisions in place to accept your short sale and process it if an imminent hardship is in place, meaning that if you're going to be short, if you can prove that at some point in the future you're not going to be able to make your payments, they will process your short sale while you're making the payments.
That can't be very hard to do.
Well, what it goes on to say, which is the most interesting part.
I think I'm going to lose my job. I might go late.
The credit agencies, FICO and another one here, VantageScore, have no provisions in place to differentiate from those people who successfully processed a short sale while in default versus those people who successfully processed a short sale while current. Nothing. It'll reflect exactly the same on your credit report. It'll hit you about the same amount. Really, it doesn't do you any good. I mean, it seems ridiculous that people aren't looking into this. I can't think of any other reason someone would be current on their short sale if they weren't going to get a credit benefit. Is there anything else I'm missing? I got a lot of shaking heads in here.
I think a lot of sorry about that nonverbal response, but I know one of the things in commercial real estate is we've got a lot of investors going after pools of notes, and those pools of notes often will include residential property, although a lot of commercial investors don't like residential properties because they carry with them new regulations and new restrictions. But once that note has been sold and the investors is making the call, a lot of short sale activity can really take place. But that, if it's with the institution that's still regulated, it is a nightmare.
Well, you know, I think all of us were pausing when you said that, because inherently when someone signs a note, they are committing to making that payment. So, you know, I know what you're saying is that why wouldn't someone just not make their payment?
Why bother?
Well, I don't know. I like to think that when people sign their name and they take a note, that they're really saying, I pledge that I'm going to make my payment.
Absolutely, that's what they say. And somewhere in that one-inch thick set of paperwork, loan docs that you signed, it says that probably 8,000 times. So there certainly is the moral aspect behind that. I agree with you.
Well, it also says that if you don't make your payments, that they have the right to take the house back.
Absolutely. I'm sure it says that in there, too, probably several times.
Yeah, it's binding on your heirs and legatees and anybody you've ever talked to. You know?
Yeah. I'm sure it's in there. It boggles my mind. And maybe at some point in the future, the credit bureaus or the banks will have a different reporting method that will allow those people that successfully process a short sale to not take the same credit hit as those who've missed their payments. But as it stands right now, there's no difference. There's no benefit.
Well, while we're talking about urban legends, meaning we haven't actually seen in practice where someone's gotten a short sale approved, then they didn't go late.
Right.
We're also hearing attorneys claim that they can get the short sale removed from your credit a couple months after you've gotten a short sale done.
Well, not just claim. I've met with them. They're going to be on the show, Georgian Law, and their real estate law firm. And certainly they have a process to remove a short sale from your credit report. It seems like a lengthy process, but nonetheless, it is possible. And we can get more into that. When we come back, we're going to be talking to our credit expert, Tiffany Hazelart, with Dedicated Credit Repair. And we're going to go through an article here written by Larry Kopp. He's one of my buddies. I golfed with him
Larry.
a weekend ago. He beat me by one stroke. I'm pretty sure he cheated.
Well, I was surprised to see him in the newspaper.
I mean, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, it's about green building, and we're going to get into that and our credit expert when we come back.
The best part about being smarter than everyone else is that we don't have to listen to all the talking heads. We don't have to listen to all the rumors and all the graybeards who think they know how this stuff really works. The law is on your side. That's right. The laws are designed to protect consumers from being riddled with debt. They're designed that way so that you can become debt-free and get a fresh start. You should do what I did. When I had financial stress, I called William McDonald with the McDonald Legal Group. Find out how you can use the law to your advantage. Delete your debt and keep your stuff. You got credit card debt, timeshares, old IRS debt, collections, medical bills. Any of this stuff can be wiped away with the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and it only takes 100 days. Call William McDonald today. 800-997-1235. 800-997-1235, or go online, sandiegobankruptcy.us.
Hi, Mr. Credit here. Are you looking to buy a new or used car? Would you like to get a special deal just for listening to the show? All you have to do is go to bestcardealsandiego.com and get connected with my friends at Toyota of Escondido. I guarantee you get a great deal and walk away happy. They'll give you the most for your trade and the lowest price for your new or used car purchase. They have a 12.5-acre facility, so finding the perfect car is easy. By the way, they can finance anyone. If you've had a bankruptcy, short sale, foreclosure, even a repossession, everyone walks away happy at Toyota of Escondido. Just go to bestcardealsandiego.com today. That's bestcardealsandiego.com. Toyota of Escondido is a family-owned and operated company, so you can support the local community, get treated the way you deserve, and ultimately get the best car deal in San Diego. Go to bestcardealsandiego.com right now. That's bestcardealsandiego.com. And get the best possible deal on a car in San Diego today. BestCarDealSanDiego.com.
Welcome back to ESPN AM Station 1700, the Real Estate Radio Hour, with your host, David McKelvin, and
Ryan White.
We've also got special guests here,
Brian Miller
and
Chuck Wise,
with Sperry Van Ness Commercial Real Estate here. Well, I'd like to give a great shout-out. Last a couple weeks ago, we had Aaron Hungerford, the CPA that we know and trust, on the show here, and he explained the proposed 3.8% tax increase on real estate gains above the married owner-occupied $500,000 tax exemption.
Well, that's the Obamacare tax. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes, that's a
layman's terms here.
Yes, the Obamacare tax. Yes, it is. And well, it's just proposed. And, you know, what we're seeing is that a lot of the high-end homeowners are taking advantage of the market right now. They're putting their house on the market, and we are seeing transactions happen. You know, when we talk about the distressed properties that are down 33%, we're really not talking about this affecting the high-end homeowners. But taxes that are proposed may affect them next year if this does get passed. So, you know, we're seeing high-end homes come on the market. High-end transactions are happening right now because some of the astute homeowners are paying attention to some of the litigation, some of the tax proposed that Aaron Hungerford had actually specifically talked about, you know, could come into play next year. I mean, 3.8% less on the gain over $500,000 could add up.
So if you have any questions about the new Obamacare tax, you can reach us here at the Real Estate Helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. We have Aaron Hungerford holding his breath, ready to answer questions, should you have any.
Keep holding.
Keep holding. Well, when we're talking about big numbers there, as you are with the luxury home market, I want to shift our focus here to green building. And this is an article, again, it popped up in the Union Tribune. I bring it up for a couple of reasons. One, because my buddy Larry Kopp wrote it. It talks about how these commercial buildings that are being built with an LED certification, which stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, are getting more per square foot than I guess you'd call a non-green or brown, if you will, property. And to get some focus on that, somewhere in the vicinity of $2.42 for a green building versus $2.04 for a non-green building, talking somewhere around 20% more. Does it cost 20% more to build one of these green buildings, Chuck?
Probably. green buildings can be very costly, and but if I can put in a little pitch, tomorrow we're going to be having a North County Association, Commercial Association of Realtors presentation at 8:30, and we will have the architect of Claire's, a restaurant Cedros.
Yeah.
Claire's is a platinum green building. It was built to LEED specifications, and those architects will be telling you all about green buildings. I hope to learn a lot too, but they do cost a little bit more to build, but the sustainability translates to lower utility costs for the tenant and to higher resale value for the investor.
Well, now, what about occupancy? According to this, 11.7% are vacant of green buildings versus 15% are vacant of non-green. So we're talking another 4% difference in occupancy. Does that make it worthwhile?
Could.
Could.
It means that the LEEDs buildings, as long as they're price adjusted,
of course,
we'll rent first.
Good.
Well, I know when we're talking about green buildings, a lot of times we'll come across residential properties that actually have solar panels on their roof and they're actually feeding back to the grid. And we're selling some of these solar farms. You know, Ryan, tell us a little bit about the solar farm that we recently sold.
Oh, it was a disaster.
It took a year, right?
It took 3 years. It sold for like $200,000.
I
can't begin to tell you how much of a disaster it was, but apparently they're chopping down a whole forest of citrus trees to put up solar panels. I don't know how much of a green translation that's going to be to cut down a forest, put up solar panels, but nonetheless, that's what they're doing, and apparently selling the power to SDG&E. It exists out there. It was out in Palma Valley.
You've got to have the right zoning designation to get something like that, but evidently it is a cash cow from what we hear. You know, people are feeding back to the grid, and this is an up-and-coming thing where if you've got the right zoning and you've got the right piece of land, you can create a solar farm, which is...
Apparently green is in. Yeah. You know, apparently green is in.
Here to stay.
According to Larry, if you're looking to build a building, you can get more money by building it green and renting out at a slightly higher rent.
Well, evidently it costs a little bit more to build it as well, but
yeah, that's what I'm told. I wouldn't expect anything different than that. Everything that I know that's made with lead and asbestos is cheap. Everything without is more expensive.
Let's not forget about polypropylene piping. That's cheap too.
Or Chinese drywall. Right?
That's right. Chinese drywall.
That's
we need
right.
that.
All that stuff is cheap. Yeah,
while we're on green, let me just bring up Solutions for Change in North County.
Okay.
Has a program where they are raising tilapia on a farm. Tilapia is raised in a special environment where the effluent from the tilapia, that is tilapia poop, guys, goes into a channel fertilizing their vegetables, their produce. So they're growing produce basically with fertilizer from the tilapia they're raising to sell at market to local markets and to use in their own program. So
wow.
I'm seeing a lot of this ingenious approach to how do we get the most out of the resources we have, because we're pretty much built out. We definitely have barriers to entry.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, I'd like to turn our attention to Brian Miller, talk about a little bit of insurance. I got to admit, Brian, insurance is not the most exciting topic I've ever heard of.
Not until you need it.
Not until you need it. That's right. So we need to make this interesting.
I can't believe you said that.
Yes, I'm sorry. Maybe it's only me.
It is only you.
Good enough. Yeah. Good enough. Well, I had a situation here recently. I own a vacation rental down in Mission Beach. My tenant who was staying in there for the summer decided to put 3 nights' worth of pasta down the drain all at once. And I guess it went through the garbage disposal. And
was it gluten-free?
It was missing something. It was it clogged up the garbage disposal and put water through the cabinets and all through the dishwasher. The property preservation people had to come out and dry it, and they brought in these huge fans, and it made all this noise. It was hot as you know what in there. And my next tenants, who were supposed to check in for $3,500 a week, couldn't check in and had to be moved. I'm kind of contemplating doing something with an insurance claim. What do you recommend?
You haven't called your insurance carrier yet.
It just happened.
Well,
I knew you were going to be here,
that's
so
right.
Why bother?
Well, I can't handle that for you. But actually, that's I've actually dealt with that very scenario for one of my customers, and the insurance policy you have in place not only should rectify or clean up the damages, of course, and do any repairs to the structure as needed, but also you probably have a provision for loss of rent.
Right. There really wasn't any damage. It was all smoke and mirrors. They stuck a fan on it and charged me $700 in 3 days. And
well, that's going to be costly. And also, it's important to dry it out correctly. That way you
don't
get mold.
They came back and blessed it with their meters and blah, blah, blah. We got that taken care of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But keep in mind, though, that if you had a contract signed on that, and check with your carrier, but you may have a provision for loss of rent. And if you had another tenant going in there and they couldn't go in, mm-hmm. you may have lost some income. And so that too can be replaced. And actually, as you bring this up, it's David and I were talking about this earlier. That's one thing that a lot of people don't realize is there's a difference between an owner-occupied dwelling, a vacation rental, and then also just a regular landlord, landlord
yeah,
policy.
I found this quite interesting because I know I can tell when you're talking to somebody and they don't want to tell you the truth. For example, if someone gets a mortgage and it's a non-owner occupied property, their interest rate's about 0.5% to 1% higher. And they think one of the myths is that they think that the insurance is going to be – it's going to follow suit. It's going to be more money, more costly to have a non-owner occupied insurance policy than it would to say, oh, it's just owner occupied.
Yeah, and actually that is a myth. Typically, the non-owner occupied policy – is probably going to be a little less expensive or certainly no more expensive. And the most important thing is that they're a different type of risk. And so one being the owner-occupied home, you've got someone loving and caring for the home, taking really, really paying really close attention to
what's
going on.
Those are all my clients.
Yes, exactly. And then obviously in a rental, there's a little less care from the occupant or the renter.
Those are Ryan's.
Three nights worth of spaghetti down the sink. Yeah, I'll do it.
I typically, as homeowners, we know who's coming to our home and who their friends are, and we have a little more control over liability risk. A tenant, you don't really know, you know them perhaps, but who their friends are coming over, and everybody thinks the landlord's rich. So the liability is rated differently. And so what you don't want to do is get in a situation where you're not insuring a property correctly, and you may have, you could have denied coverage in certain situations or certainly reduced coverage. And I get that a lot, too, meaning that that's the first thing they say is I tell them, well, what are you going to be doing with your current home as you're buying a second one? Well, I'm going to be – oh, well, no, I – no, actually, I'm living in both homes.
And, a lot of people do that,
yeah,
right?
And I'm trying to tell them, you know, it's I don't really understand or I'm not involved with what type of loan you have or any of that regulation. So let's find out what you're using a property for and make sure we get the coverage you need.
Yeah, so, I mean, Ryan, let's just
excuse me. Yeah, Ryan, you might want to check your lease with your tenant, because many standard leases prohibit, you know, pasta down the garbage disposal and all of that, and that can be handled in your deposit, for one thing. Number two, the tenant should be required to carry their own insurance, and you know,
yeah. In this unique case, it was a vacation rental,
exactly.
So she falls under innkeeper law, like renting a hotel room. Mm-hmm. Anything less than 30 days, not governed by the Department of Real Estate. So we're stuck there. And not only that, I own the vacation rental company, so I can't really sue them. Bummer that way. Yeah.
Oh, you think you can't, huh?
Well, I've opted not to.
But that's why you're in it, for the big bucks.
The vacation rental is a good business, for sure.
It is.
Yeah. So, you know, there, we talked about insurance for your primary. We talked about insurance for non-primary, a rental property,
yes,
right? And what would we expect – how would those differ? What would I covering differently between the two?
Well, first, we briefly touched on a liability, meaning they're rated differently as they have different exposures. And liability is an important coverage in any policy. Basically, that protects an individual against negligent acts. Okay, you think of bodily injury or property damage to others. But in a landlord policy or in any sort of rental situation where you're leasing land or property to someone else, personal injury can also be endorsed. And that's very important, primarily because people always think of libel or slander when they think of personal injury. But it covers wrongful entry or wrongful eviction. And so in that case, maybe the person or the individual doesn't have any – they haven't suffered any bodily harm or there's no property damage, but they feel they've been wronged, and that would fall under personal injury. And so that's an important coverage to have, especially as a landlord. Now, in an owner-occupied home, you're covering, of course, the dwelling, all of your personal belongings. You've got other provisions such as additional living expenses and things in the event you couldn't live in a home. And, of course, the liability. Those are the primary coverages. In a landlord situation, you're really only covering the dwelling and liability. You usually get a small amount for landlord personal property, which if it's furnished, of course, you would want to increase mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. generally, that just handles refrigerator, washer, dryer. And instead of additional living expenses, as I talked about earlier, you would probably have what they call loss of rents.
Sure.
So if you couldn't rent your unit for an length of time due to a claim, you would be able to recuperate what you could have earned.
I see. It seems like I need to revisit my insurance policy, that's for sure.
Well, when you take one aspect of insurance out and replace it for another, when you're talking about owner-occupied or non-owner-occupied insurance coverage, basically you end up with about the same cost. In fact, maybe even the non-owner-occupied being slightly less.
Yeah, so that would be accurate. The cost, there's little difference in the cost, and usually the non-owner occupied, because you're not handling all the personal property and things of that nature, is usually less.
When we come back, we are going to get into insurance deductibles. Yes, we're going to talk about that, get you some ideas what insurance myths we may be missing out on, and perhaps you can give us the inside track as to, you know, what we should do. Do you offer a review of the insurance policies that I might have? Be a good thing to cover. When we come back here with Chuck Wise and Brian Miller, the Real Estate Helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the United States own mutual funds. It makes me wonder, how many of these people have read all the fine print associated with those investments? The good news is, you don't have to try and figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is willing to do a free risk cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, call the helpline today and get a free analysis so you can find out how much these investments are really costing you. 888-888-0154. That's 888-0154. 888-0154. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much? Dan will tell you this for free, and he'll also give you a risk analysis snapshot so you can find out if you're taking on more risk than you should be. Just call the helpline today at 888-0154. That's 888-0154.
Pacific Coast Commercial is a San Diego commercial real estate and property management company. Are you a business owner looking for the perfect building to purchase or lease? Or a landlord tired of high vacancies and the day-to-day challenges of tenants and property management? Pacific Coast Commercial handles the sales, leasing, and property management of all asset types throughout San Diego County. Let us show you why Pacific Coast Commercial is the right choice for you. Call Vince today at 619-469-3600. That's 619-469-3600. Or PacificCoastCommercial.com.
Welcome back. This is ESPN Radio 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Hour.
Woohoo!
With your host,
David McKelvin.
And Ryan White. I'm here with Chuck Wise. And we didn't mention this before. He is the vice president. That's what his card says, vice president of Sperry Van Ness.
When I order the cards, I get to do that.
Ah, smart, smart. That's good. I guess that explains what's on your card,
that's
David.
That's right.
And Brian Miller. We want to do a little conversation here about deductibles. And really, before we jump right into deductibles, I think it may be valuable to get some understanding. Brian Miller is willing to review an insurance policy. As you probably heard, he mentioned some of the differences between a homeowner policy and a non-owner-occupant policy. And frankly, I have no idea if I'm covered the way you said I would. And I would imagine most people out there have no idea. I mean, as I mentioned, Brian, sorry, not the most exciting topic in the world.
Well, I'd like to just add something here. You know, I've known Brian for about 7 years, 8 years. family man, you know, you got two kids, a wife, lives in Carlsbad, local guy here. I trust him. When I have questions about insurance, I call Brian. If you have any questions about insurance, feel free to call us, leave us a message, 888-551-2593. But what's the most exciting for me is that a lot of times we're out there in the field and I'll show a property and a homeowner's like, hey, great, you know, there's a fire hydrant in the front yard. I'm going to get a discounted insurance rate, right?
Well, no, you're not going to get a discount.
Oh, come on. Not even for us.
But it's nice that you have a hydrant in your front yard.
It just means you can't park there.
Well, you got to mow around it.
That's right.
You can't park. That's right. You can't park there.
No, David, typically a neighborhood or actually a home has what they call a protection class rating, which is a fancy way to say how good is the fire department in that area. And so as long as there's a hydrant within 1,000 feet.
Really? So they rate fire departments like, oh, well, you let one burn down. So, you know, that's taking a star away from you guys. Well, insurance rates up for everybody.
That's right. I think it's in response time and overall. They don't really get to at the individual.
Let's get out there in the morning and start running some drills around there with those guys.
If they do rescue cats, I think there is some extra credit for that.
Well, that's good. That's good to know.
So if I'm within 1,000 feet of a fire hydrant, I'm as good as it's going to get in terms of rates.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think it, depending on your neighborhood, 1,000 foot, 1,001, it could impact you negatively.
Well, my dad would probably know. He is a retired fireman. Dad, if you're listening, how far apart do they put fire hydrants? Do they put them 2,000 feet apart? I don't know.
I would have no idea, but I imagine probably less than that.
Yeah, less than that.
Okay, good enough. Okay, so we're always in the green.
Just enough
that
to where the hose will reach the house, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, okay. So, you know, when we're talking about myths and busting myths regards to insurance, you know, what about burglar alarms? Don't we get a discount when we have a burglar alarm?
You do get a discount for a burglar alarm. You get actually the discount for a monitor burglar and fire alarm is important. It's not necessarily significant. Of course,
Wait. You had me at you do get a discount.
Well,
that just feels good. I mean, go ahead and say that again.
You do get a discount,
thank you, David.
Right. And we could easily spend that over lunch.
But all are menu,
okay, that's right.
But I guess, you know, the point is that that's probably not the reason to get a security system because
right.
most carriers aren't going to give you a huge discount for
it. So a security system is maybe $30 a month, something like that. What kind of discount do I get by having something like that?
Well, depending on the size of your home and your overall premium, you might get $30 a year.
Ah. So 1/12, okay.
Which is most of David and I's lunch.
Most of David and I's lunch. Okay, good.
So what if you have an empty pool in the backyard?
Wow. There's definitely not a discount.
Definitely not a discount.
There's definitely
for that one,
not
huh?
a discount. And I think you're talking about whether or not it would be insurable.
Well, I mean, let's just say that. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of properties out there that have been left just at the whim of the marketplace because people have abandoned them. There's a lot of REOs out there. And I hear kids like to sneak in backyards and skateboard in these empty pools every now and then. But when it comes to finding a property that has a pool that's been left empty, what kind of insurance issues could that be? Is it an insurable property? Or
it would be insurable, although it is a significant risk. Vacant properties, once again, we're getting into another type, but that's important because vacant properties need a special policy. It's called a vacant dwelling policy, and they are a little bit pricey, but for a reason, meaning that no one's around, and they do exclude certain things, such as perhaps vandalism, malicious mischief, which of course can be endorsed. Most carriers are not going to like a vacant pool. If it's fenced and it's fenced directly, you could probably get that through the underwriters. But obviously, any sort of risk, that's kind of like having a car on blocks. That's, they want to see a home in good maintenance and upkeep.
I have a list of like 30 questions specific like this for are we going to discount for this, discount for this. It's like Flo wrote my thing here.
You said you didn't like talking about insurance, right? So.
I've got a question. Okay, how do you balance the deductible versus the premium?
That's what I was going with, deductible.
Oh, well, that's a simple math problem. So
simple
math problem. Actually,
carry the one.
You know, when you look at that, basically any carrier can run off a list of deductibles, okay? And so I like to look at, well, first, there's a risk tolerance, which I'm big on good coverage, high liability, and high deductible. My bias is you really want to use your insurance for big catastrophic situations. Now, not necessarily catastrophic, but a big claim.
Big ones.
The small things you want to take care of yourself. But if you go down and list the premium per deductible, $1,000, $15, $25, you can usually look and a lot of, for example, on a homeowner's, most of my policies now I'm writing $2,500 deductibles. And so I can run off a $5,000 deductible. I can run off a $1,500 deductible. Look at the premium. And the question is, well, how long does it going to take me to save the difference? Or between a $2,500 and a $5,000 deductible is $2,500. Am I saving $200 a year? Am I saving $400 mm-hmm. a year? Mm-hmm. Does it make sense? Do the same thing with auto deductibles. And so essentially, it's kind of then what makes sense to the insured. I say that over the long run, you're going to save money because it is less expensive with a higher deductible. And you may as well recuperate that savings over time. And then when you need it, go ahead and dig into your pockets and pay that.
I've got a question for you too, Brian. How efficient is it to not turn in your property losses, just cover them yourself and not bother the insurance company? Because every time you do that,
it goes the premium.
Puts a blem on your report. You no longer have a clean report, and your premium goes up.
Well, you don't. Their premium doesn't go up. You lose a discount, and so. Okay, your premium goes up.
But yeah, we're looking at you like, what?
Rich pocket is the money in, right?
Well, your premium just went up, right?
No, technically you do lose a discount. Most carriers give people claims-free discounts. But yes, it does negatively impact your premium. And I think you were saying, does it make sense to basically cover these losses yourself? And that's why you would do a higher deductible. A $5,000 deductible to me is not unreasonable, depending on the size of a home
or a
property. In commercial business, it's a little different, meaning I don't see that much in our policies, at least. I don't see that much difference in commercial real estate on the size of the deductible as far as insurance policies go. But and also in commercial risk, they expect a certain number of claims. But on a homeowner's policy, there is a significant difference. And it is wise as far as taking care of the small things. I can help a customer calculate the increase in premium. And so I do like it when I get involved in the claims process.
Yeah. But when you're talking about calculating the cost of insuring a property, if you're out there and you want to get a quote from Brian, be sure that when you quote, you don't actually quote what it costs to buy the house, because that's not the replacement cost. That's not exactly what is going to be insured.
Absolutely. Yeah. Homes are insured for what they call dwelling replacement costs, when really what we're talking about is the estimated cost to rebuild the structure. So that very structure, whether it's on the cliffs of La Jolla overlooking the ocean, it may sell for a great deal more than it would out in the middle of California somewhere. But the point is there may not be that much difference in what it costs to reconstruct the property.
Sure. Well, I've got a myriad of questions. Really what I've learned, Brian, is that I have no idea what kind of insurance coverage I have.
You're just now figuring that out?
You need to come
yeah,
see me.
I guess so. So, yeah, now that I'm sitting here looking at it, I go, oh, my God, I have no idea if I have all these things. So one of
you
your
don't
service,
have to. Brian knows.
One of your services, Brian, is to review my insurance policy, make sure that it is appropriate for me, and advise me as to what I should go out and get. And to get a hold of Brian, which is a free service, to get a hold of Brian, our real estate helpline number here is 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. Free insurance analysis from Brian Miller.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, just briefly, before we go to break here, we have a few minutes. Mr. Vice President.
Sure.
Chuck Wise.
Give us a few minutes about this auction.
Oh.
Let's talk about that a little bit. That's interesting stuff, man. We got just a few minutes here before we go to break, but you said no reserve. That's
no reserve.
Pretty unusual.
No reserve. National auction. My apologies. I didn't bring all the information on that, but I can get online really quick and get the www so you can go online with the auction. But many of these auctions, we did an auction earlier in the year for FDIC on quite a few assets they had in Riverside County. That was the reverse. That was the kind of auction that was supposedly reserved, but it actually turned out to be a real value. Some of my clients got incredible buys.
Incredible buys.
On cell tower sites that had 67 acres
Ka-ching.
Of land with it. Yep. It was a cash flowing property. They bought it for $50,000. $50,000 for 67
wow.
acres
wait,
with a cell tower.
Wait, did everybody hear that? Because you don't have to have a tremendous amount of money to be in the commercial industry, to be purchasing
yeah,
commercial
really,
real estate.
That's a really right? good point. And a couple things that I want to get to when we come back
uh-huh.
is how much money you're going to have to get into this process.
My money or your money?
Well, anybody's money.
Okay.
How much
your
money is
money.
Necessary? Can I get a loan? And in general, the cost to keep them up, I think, would be really good content for our listeners. Again, the Real Estate Helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. More about Sperry Vanness Real Estate, commercial real estate auction when we come back.
Cool.
You know, I talk a lot about real estate on the show because real estate mistakes are very costly. Many of the people I hear from who are in bad situations with money have made at least one or more real estate mistakes in recent history. It's tough for me because I would have easily been able to help them avoid those mistakes if we had spoken sooner rather than later. This is why I urge anyone who is facing foreclosure, thinking about a short sale, or stuck in what I call the loan modification nightmare to call the Real Estate Helpline today and get some free and honest advice before doing anything. You can also get a free home valuation and loan modification update as well. It's 888-888-0154. That's the phone number, 888-888-0154, or email online, MrCreditRadio.com.
If you have student loans, listen very carefully to this message. Student loan debt in America recently passed credit card debt as the number one debt held by Americans. The good news is Congress has taken action and there is now a program that can help you save money on your student loans. Call 877-927-6864 right now if you want to save money on your student loans. That's 877-927-6864. You can consolidate your student loans into one low monthly payment, get your deferment time renewed, and even get some of the principal balance forgiven in some cases. You can change the repayment plan as often as you need. There are experts in this program ready for your call. 877-927-6864. That's 877-927-6864. You can stretch your repayment term out from 10 years to as much as 30 years if you need. 877-927-6864. 64 right now to save money on your student loans.
Para resultados y más información acerca de este programa, consultar la página espnradio1700.com.
Welcome back to ESPN AM station 1700 Real Estate Radio Hour. We're live with Chuck Wise from Sperry Van Ness. Chuck, you've got a number of letters behind your name. What does all that mean?
Well, CCIM is Certified Commercial Investment Member. It means that we've taken the classes, had the training, had the resume reviewed by a group of our peers. It's a national organization headquartered in Chicago. And basically it means that we're certified to advise you and to help you in your commercial real estate brokerage.
Sounds valuable.
We need help.
Very valuable. And
advise
it's also
us.
A network. So I've got buddies out there all over the country and actually quite a few in China and overseas that do the same thing.
So let's get to the meat here. You had mentioned the auction. What kind of cash do I have to have?
You know, it depends. We some of the auctions that we have done in the past, $50,000 is all
for the one coming up. For the one coming up,
don't know because it's an open outcry, and it will depend on what the asset actually sells for.
What does that mean? Open outcry.
Open outcry means that there is no reserve, and you either attend online or you attend at the facility.
And where's the facility?
And I don't know.
It's a secret.
You have to call Chuck.
That's right.
Website and location. You need to
call me.
Chuck.
My number is area code 760-224-9000, and I'll get you lined up with that auction because it's going to be very exciting. And as I say, it's national. So there are some land parcels in Indiana that you're probably going to get some pretty good deals on.
Well, make a guess. I mean, when you do these things, are we talking minimum stuff sells at $2 million? Or,
no.
As you mentioned, is it common that stuff sells for $50,000?
Minimum stuff can sell for $150,000.
Okay.
On this particular auction, because the auctioneers, the last one I did was an FDIC auction. FDIC candidly did not position themselves really well for that, and they had some very, very low prices. Mm-hmm. But
you've got to have cash on hand. And you have to have done your diligence ahead of time. There's no 17-day period of nothing.
It's cash and you're done.
So you get a list of them prior to the auction.
You do that.
Okay. And you'd mentioned a number. You kind of went by that really quick. Let me repeat that. You can reach Chuck Wise at 760-224-9000. Again, Chuck Wise at 760-224-9000. And we're talking about the up-and-coming Sperry Van Ness commercial real estate auction, and you said you're going to auction off 700 homes. Is that right?
Oh, no. It's all commercial. No homes.
Okay.
Although some of them might be individual lots, but there will be properties all across the country.
Awesome. That sounds like quite an experiment. I guess I shouldn't say experiment, but quite a way for people to get involved in the marketplace that perhaps aren't involved. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about is when I look at commercial real estate. Maybe my perception is wrong, but there's an article in the paper here about some commercial hotel selling for like $66 million. Unfortunately, not this year. That's not the pool that I'm swimming in. Maybe next year. But
speak for yourself.
Yeah. How does someone get involved at a lower level in commercial real estate?
I'll tell you how I did it. The last downturn, 1997, we started off by buying condos. We bought condos in San Marcos for $17,000 a unit per condo.
So residential, you're talking.
$17,000, right? We bought condos. And we bought several of them. We bought nine at a time. But, we turned around and exchanged those for apartment buildings and office buildings and other things as the market matured. Market came up much faster than I anticipated on that. We were looking for some modest returns. But the market, when it recovers, it goes like a rocket. It's amazing. And we're going to see that again because right now we're very depressed. Lenders don't really make many loans in commercial real estate that you can live with, but that's going to change.
You can live with. That's good to point out. What's a loan I can't live with?
Well, all of the restrictions with phase one and the appraisals are miserable right now. You really can't get a good appraisal.
They're coming in low.
Absolutely. They're all coming in very low. So a lot of people just kind of go, I don't want to play that game. I'm just going to pay cash, position my property, and let it go for a while.
Well, if you can pay cash. I mean, we were looking at some statistics, and they were saying 12,000 homes sell every day. Mm-hmm. 12,000 homes sell nationally every day, and 8,000 of those get mortgages.
Right.
So, you know, that's a $3,000 difference every day. So 3,000 people out there have the cash to just invest in. Now, that's residential, but like you're saying, you know, we're talking about commercial real estate here, so there's an awful lot of cash right. in that environment too, right?
In Southern California, there are homes that are selling for $30,000 to $50,000 for three-bedroom, two-bath homes. And turning around and renting those for $600 a month makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Southern California. You got to drive a little bit. You got to be willing to fill your tank.
Mm-hmm.
But in commercial properties and multifamily properties, same numbers, $30,000 a unit. They will cash flow. You might have to get them re-tenanted. But, you know, it's a job that you can do and basically come up with a very, very high return on properties that you're buying on the cheap.
So re-tenanted means kick everybody out. Right. Bring them all back in.
Right.
Because they're used to not paying or they're used to leaving the trash
slow
around
pay.
Or whatever.
Or maybe it's an REO and the bank has already done
that for
you.
They've already been kicked out. They've already been untenanted.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're really talking about cap rate.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well,
I mean,
I want to know, where is this? Where is this location? What are some of the areas? You'd mentioned you want to buy in areas that nobody else wants.
Parts of Southwest Riverside County. Hemet is one area that had gone up like a rocket. They had 8,000 of those homes you were talking about were built in Hemet, you know.
So okay.
It has gone through a real overhang, some real significant problems. Outside Coachella Valley went through some tough times. Palm Springs, Palm Desert, coming back very, very strong.
So this is residential or commercial you're talking about?
Residential
now?
And
residential.
Commercial.
I do both.
Commercial.
Sure. Just wanted to make sure. But you're saying both those areas are ripe for both investments.
Exactly.
I understand.
And there's a lot of overlap. It's interesting. Commercial brokers in the past, you know, didn't want a thing to do with residential. Well, the reality is residential is pretty much driving the market.
What would be the benefit of buying, let's say, an apartment building with 10 units at $30,000 a unit versus 10 condos at 30,000 a unit that are not in one building? Why would someone choose one method over the other?
You know, it's a matter of tolerance, I think. You have the ability to manage a 10-unit building in one place with a lot more efficiency, but at the same time, you're diversifying your risk, and maybe if you're able to get, you know, 10 homes scattered around and they will cash flow, mm-hmm. and you're typically going to be able to get more rent for a single-family home than you do an apartment building. That would make a lot of sense.
Is it commonly the case that in terms of cost for purchasing, that on a per unit, per door basis, buying them grouped in a building, I can buy them for less? Let's say 1,000 square feet, two-bedroom house, two-bedroom unit, I can buy cheaper as a 10-unit building as opposed to 10 individual units. Is that commonly the case, or is that a misconception?
Where are you talking about? I mean, the interesting thing is, San Diego is a whole nother ballgame. We're looking $200 a foot in San Diego. We're looking $125,000 a unit average, and that is old stuff, you know, 35 mm-hmm. years old.
Mm-hmm.
So San Diego is much different from Southwest Riverside County or parts of San Bernardino County that have much lower numbers.
But I mean, when we're talking about the outer skirts, I mean, obviously location.
Right.
So you had mentioned they overbuilt out there. It was kind of a mess when the economy went down.
Right.
We all see the outer perimeters as a tougher depreciating area given the market. And are you suggesting that now it's a good investment, or what would you say if I came to you and said, you know, I've got $300,000, I want to get into commercial real estate, you know, what do I do, Chuck?
Would I buy one condo in San Diego, or would I buy a 10 in San Bernardino or Riverside County? Mm-hmm. You know, I think I would probably, honey, if you're listening, forgive me, probably buy the 10, but because there's more upside potential. But the reality is, buying property in San Diego is pretty bulletproof. It's barrier to entry. They're not going to be building anymore. They're going to go up in value every year. We travel, you know, around the world, and we go to Bangkok. Bangkok has prices that are higher than ours for condos.
Really?
And mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. You know, it's just, you know, so it is a reality that urban areas that are hot spots are going to continue growing, and they're bulletproof but lower returns. Cap rates in San Diego sometimes sub 4, 3.5. to 4.5 cap rate.
And quickly pretty explain low. What a cap rate is.
Cap rate is the net income divided by, and net income means what really sticks to you after paying your utilities and everything else except the mortgage, and you divide that by the purchase price of the property. So that gives you a number.
So it's a way to measure how good the investment is performing.
It is. And there are four different measurements that I like to use. The gross rent multiplier is one. The price per square foot is another. The cap rate is another. And the fourth is, forget.
Yeah, there's a fourth one.
There's a fourth one out there.
Obviously, the
still
fourth
a
least important.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's good information. I'm kind of interested in – you know, you mentioned Hemet, $30,000 for a house. I mean, I would like to think – I don't see how that can go down any further. There's probably $20,000 worth of materials in the home, and even if the land isn't worth nothing, seems to me that that's at the bottom.
Well, if you're thinking about investing out there, Ryan, I know I'm a good real estate agent, but you better hurry. You better hurry because, you know, I think the word is out. Right? We're no longer speaking to buyers that are unaware that the marketplace is on the move. I mean, when you've got the market that we have right now where the existing home sales are up 8.6%, existing inventory is down 24.4%, distressed properties, REOs, you know, we're 33% down on that, and interest rates are down almost a full point over last year, it's not hard to see why home values are starting to creep up and why homeowners that have had their house on the market for a while are now experiencing a different market. I mean, they're getting offers.
They're getting offers. There's been a real increase in our activity that we see just over the last, I would say, 4 weeks, 3 to 5 weeks anyway. And we're really seeing a ripple effect from the first-time home buyers with spectacular interest rates that are even moving activity up to the $3 million homes. And when people are buying $3 million homes, they don't care what the interest rate is. They're not getting a loan. There's jumbo nothing down. It's all cash. And there's no concerns in that regard. So it takes a ripple effect for these first-time home buyers to get in and move out a move-up buyer to the next step, and it keeps going up the rung of the ladder, and we're feeling it.
Well, you know, let's see. When interest rates are bottoming out, prices are starting to rise to a certain degree, and rents are going up in almost every marketplace. You know, you've got a market that is really on the move right now. However, with the slow of the season, because we always experience a slow this time of year when we start creeping into the holidays, there's a steady flow of REOs that are coming to market. So the REOs are going to affect certain aspects, certain price points of our market, but not every market. Not the market over 700,000. They're going to be completely exempt. So what we're really getting back to is that we're in an appreciating market, but we're only looking at appreciating about 1% to 2% per year.
Which is what we want.
It's better than
it was.
That's
where we want it to be.
Right.
That's where we want it to be. Okay, so wrap up. Brian Miller, thanks for joining us. Anybody out there that didn't completely grasp everything that he was saying, as I didn't, he is here. He is available to answer your insurance questions, review your policies. Again, the real estate helpline number, 888-551-2593, 888-551-2593. If you're interested in commercial real estate auctions, buying was a cell tower for $50,000, great example. If you want to buy some apartment buildings, $30,000 a unit out in Hemet, Chuck Wise is our guy. Again, the real estate helpline, 888-551-2593. One more thing before we go, we're offering to all of our listeners a free buyer and a free seller ebook. Anybody who calls in, that's what we're giving away, David.
Right.
Tell us what our ebook has.
Well, you know, we put together an ebook for the buyers in this marketplace for the summer 2012, and we've got also an ebook out there for the sellers for the summer 2012 to really find out what's going on in the marketplace right now. Call us at 888-551-2593, and we'll email it over to you at no cost.
Talk to you next week.